Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast.
At Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
Back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys get a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success so you know something I can really do this.
Welcome back to the Unconquered Podcast, everybody. Once again, this is your host, Jason Staples, here talking the Clemson-Florida State game. Going to have some analysis of that game in this episode. Before we get started, just a reminder, you can find me on Twitter at Doc Staples. You can also subscribe to this podcast through iTunes or your podcast manager of choice. We're expanding into those various options that we're not already in, that I'm not already in for this podcast. You can also listen to this podcast online through Seminole Sports Radio from vSporto. You can also listen on your mobile devices via the Seminole Sports Radio app available on iTunes or the Android Marketplace. And as always, if you're enjoying this podcast, leave effusive five-star ratings on iTunes and share us on social media. The more listeners, the better. Well, let's get to it. Florida State loses at home to Clemson. We'll finish third in the ACC Atlantic Division in a year in which Florida State came into the year with legitimate hopes of being a playoff team. Obviously, a very disappointing year for Florida State, a very disappointing loss for a team that really wanted to come in and prove that they were better than the overrated sort of reputation that they'd gotten so far this year. And to that end, I will say this game validated that this team is a lot better than a lot of people thought. This was not Clemson not playing well. Good Clemson showed up in this game, and Florida State still gave them all they could handle and really should have won the game. They should have won the game. And that's despite DeAndre Francois not playing well, really. I mean, he missed a lot of throws. We'll talk about this a little bit later. That's despite the offensive line being pretty much unable to pass protect on the right side. They opened a lot of holes in the running game, but couldn't protect the passer on the right side for key stretches of this game. And that's with no Derwin James on the field. And this is the second time in about a year that Florida State has defended Clemson better than Alabama did. And this time without Derwin James on the field. That's kind of crazy, actually, if you think about it. Now, the game actually went pretty close, I have to say, to what we expected on this podcast. And just as a reminder, here's what I had to say coming into this game from our pregame podcast. And then we'll talk a little bit about sort of how this matched up with expectations. The more I've looked at it, the more I've thought Florida State has a real chance at winning this game. But no, I'm not going to pick Florida State to win this game. I do think this is going to be a very hard-fought and extremely physical game, very much like the Florida State-Miami game was, which still is probably the most physical game I've seen all year. I think this game may end up more physical than that. And I think it's going to be a very, very hard-fought game. Like I said, I won't be surprised if FSU wins the game, but probability in the end of the day, to me, favors the team that does have the better quarterback. And I think Clemson probably, if you look at the two lines, has a slight edge up front overall. And you take the better quarterback and the better overall matchup in the trenches, even if it's just a slight matchup in the trenches, I think that overcomes the home field situation. I'm ultimately going to go with Clemson winning this game, say 26-23. I'll give Florida State a 45% win probability in this game. If Dalvin Cook's able to bust a play or two, if Florida State's able to create an explosive play here or there, then that score changes. And I think Florida State wins the game with a turnover here or there. I mean, it's going to take a couple explosive plays, but ultimately, I think, you know, in terms of probability, this is going to favor Clemson, slightly better team. I think the gap between these two teams is a lot less than the perception. It's going to be interesting to see how this plays out in Tallahassee on Saturday. I know I'm looking forward to it. I know Florida State, that team is looking forward to it, getting a chance to prove that they weren't as overrated coming into this year as a lot of people now think that they were. Well, I mean, to be honest, that sounds pretty close. I mean, I had it a little bit lower scoring than it turned out to be. But Clemson did win by 3. Now, of course, that was about the opening spread. I think the opening spread was minus 2.5. So, I mean, it's not exactly rocket science there. I mean, the odds makers had this game pretty well figured out, I think, from the beginning. But I will say this. I was wrong in that I did not expect to see Florida State dominate Clemson up front the way that they did on from the Florida State defensive line to that level, and I did not expect to see Florida State in a position to go up by 2 scores well into the fourth quarter in a point where if a block in the back doesn't happen, I'm not only wrong about the outcome of the game in terms of it not being a 3-point margin, but Florida State wins that game and potentially wins that game going away with the momentum that they had at that point in the game, up 8, going in to go up by 2 scores. That's game changing at that point, and they had that opportunity. This game ultimately went. I think Florida State was perhaps better in this game than I expected, and honestly, the advanced stats. This is something that Bill Connolly from over at SB Nation posted earlier today. He posted that the advanced stat profile in Florida State, based on how things should have gone, you know, all things being equal, with the numbers that showed up, you'd expect Florida State to have won this game. And actually, Clemson's win probability in a game that matches that stat profile is about 45%. To put it in perspective, Clemson's win probability against Louisville was closer to 60%. It's like 62%, if I remember right. So Florida State, that tells you how far Florida State has come in the last month. And that's despite some additional injuries and some other things. That's a team that went from getting absolutely shellacked, blown out by Louisville, to playing this Clemson team closer than Louisville did and actually being in position where they really should have won the game. But, you know, ultimately Clemson has, as I said after last year's game against Clemson, Clemson has their Jameis Winston. And with Deshaun Watson, Clemson has basically become Jameis Winston era Florida State, where they may be down, they may be out, but they just never quite get knocked out. And they just come back, and they're clutch, and they understand, they know how to win games. And ultimately, that's what did it in this game. Both defensive lines dominated both offensive lines all game. And with the exception of Florida State being able to run the football basically at will. So in that sense, Florida State actually had, they got the better of Clemson's front in that respect. And I think in hindsight, the Florida State offensive staff probably wishes that they'd run it a little bit more, particularly earlier in the game. But I don't think they could have anticipated. I certainly don't think they did anticipate that they would run with that level of success against Clemson, given how much Clemson comes downhill and commits to take away the run, and how much they would be keying on Dalvin Cook. I don't think that they expected it would come that easily. But in any case, you know, Florida State had some edge there, and that was the biggest edge up front that on either side, until things got into long yardage situations when that flipped. And all things being equal, that basically means that when you look at this game, both defensive lines, you can basically say, dominated their respective offensive lines. But the real difference, the biggest difference in this game, is that Clemson had a Deshaun Watson, an experienced, top-level Heisman candidate caliber quarterback, who was able to make plays against backup secondary players late in the game. And Florida State was starting a redshirt freshman who struggled, particularly in the first half in this game. And the quarterback position, I think, was the biggest difference in this game. And that's, there's no shame in that, with Watson being a third-year player with 2.5 years of starting experience and Francois being a second-year player in his first year as a starter. So it's just that is what it is, and there's no way around that. Now, finishing out this overview, you know, lasting memory is, of course, always the biggest thing, the thing that everybody remembers, the last thing that everybody that happens in the game, the last drive or two is always what everybody remembers. So the lasting memory from this game is going to be Florida State's offensive line unit melting down with a couple key motion penalties that took them out of field goal range, or I guess close to field goal range, given how FSU's kicked it. But taking them out of field goal range and then giving up two sacks back to back to end the game. You know, that's what everybody's going to remember about this. And that's what everybody's going to feel like cost Florida State this game, that the offensive line was just absolutely atrocious. It was garbage out there. And if they had any other offensive line unit, then they should have won this game. And that's not really true. I mean, at the end of the day, as I said already, Florida State's offensive line really actually dominated the game in the running game. They struggled in pass protection. Clemson was able to basically get to the quarterback whenever they needed to. And there were altogether too many motion penalties and all that. But the reality is, when you have elite-level defensive lines, that's what you're going to see more often than not, is that the defensive line is going to get the better of the offensive line, even when it's a really good one. I mean, Florida State's offensive line or defensive line dominated Clemson's offensive line comparably. Naughty Walker, Sweat, Christmas, Ime, that group, they dominated Clemson's offensive line. I mean, you think about it, Florida State averaged 7.1 yards per play, 7.13 yards per play. Almost a full yard more than what Clemson averaged in this game per play. Clemson, I mean, think about that. Clemson actually only put up 6.31 yards per play, which is still pretty good. I mean, that's pretty good offense, and you certainly don't want to give up that much. But Florida State averaged almost a yard more per play than Clemson did. So, I mean, you think about that. Normally when that happens, you expect to win the game. But at the end of the day, I mean, everybody's going to remember the last thing, you know, with FSU's offensive line melting down on that two-minute drive, that two-minute drill. But the reality is, you know, Clemson won the game in the first quarter when they went up 14-0. There's your patented Florida State slow start, and it was just too much of a hole to dig out of against a very good Clemson team. But that said, you have to give a lot of credit to a young Florida State team and a Florida State offense that has not really played that great coming into this game, averaging 7.13 yards per play against a defense that came in allowing 4.17 yards per play. So 7 yards per play against a defense that was averaging 4 yards per play. That's about 75% more than they'd given up on average coming in. And they played some really, really good teams. Some teams that have been able to put up some offensive numbers. Think about it. Florida State put up 7.13 yards per play against Clemson. Louisville put up 5.74 yards per play. Florida State was another yard and a half more effective offensively against Clemson's defense, which also ate Louisville's offensive line alive. But Florida State was a yard and a half more effective against Clemson's defense than Louisville was. Louisville also gave up 8.18 yards per play defensively against Clemson. Florida State gave up 6.31. So this game was actually, even though the outcome was not what Florida State fans obviously wanted to see, this was a game where, quite honestly, you have to look at it and you start looking at the numbers and you go, wow, for the most part, Florida State played like a top five team against a top five team. They just cannot close the deal. And this is a team. This has been the problem with Florida State all year. They've just not been able to close the deal. And there's any number of reasons why, but it's like there's an obstruction and all of a sudden they get to a point where they need to close the deal on a key drive, and you have a couple of key penalties, or you have a play that gets called back, or you have a bad throw, or you have a drop ball. Something gets in the way of this team being able to finish what it was doing, and that happened here. But I think all in all, Florida State did validate that they were not really overrated coming into the year. They just were going to take some time to get to what people thought they would be. And as young as they were starting the year, and given the way that that schedule started, they didn't have the time to develop into that team. And of course, losing Derwin James cost them any margin of error that they had defensively. But in any case, I mean, this was a game that was just a few different breaks away. I mean, think about it. Not just the big penalty, the cut block call that called back, that was about a 60-65 yard penalty at the end of the day. It wasn't just that. That cost Florida State the ability to go up two scores halfway through the fourth quarter. But also just a little bit later, Florida State is going for two to go up seven, and Travis Rudolph runs the wrong route. He actually runs the right route. It's a pivot route, but it's one of those where you have to look back at the quarterback, and if you've got space, he's going to throw you outside, and if not, then you have to kind of turn it into a little bit of a fade and give the quarterback a chance to throw it, to make it a jump ball, to give yourself a chance. You just, you know, it's one of those, you don't quit on it. Well, quarterback rightly recognized that he had him beat on the initial pivot, and Rudolph just didn't give it enough time, and only got a hand on it, wasn't able to haul it in on that two-point conversion. If that's a two-point conversion, then this game goes into overtime, because Clemson doesn't go for two and get it and go up by three. There's just a number of things that just didn't quite go right enough for Florida State to pull this out. And the other thing is Trey Marshall's absence in this game, and I've talked about this a lot on Twitter and elsewhere, Trey Marshall's absence was the difference in this game, really, at the end of the day. Florida State lost the game in the first quarter in many respects by going down 14-0. But Trey Marshall's absence in the fourth quarter is what allowed Clemson to claw back in it. Florida State gave up 20 points through three quarters and a few minutes of the fourth. In about the last 10 minutes of the fourth, after Marshall got ejected, they gave up 17 points. That's a pretty big difference. And all you have to look at is the yards per attempt before and after Marshall's ejection. They go from a little under 8 yards per attempt, 7.8 yards per attempt, to 13.3 yards per attempt afterwards. That's almost double the yards per attempt after Marshall's ejection for targeting. And quite frankly, that's just because Florida State's down to what? It's number 5 and number 6 safeties at that point, assuming Ermin Lane is your number 4. Because you've got Derwin James, you got Trey Marshall, and you got Nate Andrews. Those are your top three. Then you got Ermin Lane, and then you put Bruton and Westbrook out there, which they had out there. That's who Clemson targeted. They did exactly what I would have done. And at one point on the field in these key drives in the fourth quarter, and I've heard people say, well, Florida State, the problem with this defense is they just don't. Anytime they need to make a play, they don't. Well, you look at who was on the field in those key drives at the end of the game. At one point, you had two true freshmen, and 2 3-star sophomore backup safeties as your secondary, along with a true freshman wide receiver, or true freshman linebacker. And then the fifth guy in the secondary was Ermin Lane, who's only played secondary for about a month. So you got 2 true freshmen, 2 3-star sophomore backup safeties basically getting their first meaningful time this year, and a true freshman linebacker. Well, geez, out of your back 7, that's what, 2, 4, 5, 6 of your back 8, if you're in a 3-man line, which they were on occasion, 6 of your back 8 are totally inexperienced, totally green back there. And they gave up a couple busts. The play that scored, Kyle Myers just didn't come off of the vertical that ran inside to take the corner route, and that was that. I mean, at one point, 9 of 11 defensive players on the field are still in their first year of significant action at their position. Think about that. Taylor, Myers, Jackson, Burns, Westbrook, Bruton, Lane, and McFadden were all on the field together. And that's not even including second-year Josh Sweat, who, he's got a year of starting experience, so, he kind of doesn't count. You can't survive that way. You can't survive that way. It's just not going to happen. So, this is Florida State just not being deep enough and largely because of some recruiting misses, particularly in that 2013 class, which was just disastrous. They were able to get a couple key players, Jalen Ramsey, most notably. Bobo Wilson and Kermit Whitfield have made some contributions over the years, and there have been a few others. Obviously DeMarcus Walker is a really good player. But by and large, that 2013 class was disastrous. And that was the year that FSU replaced six assistant coaches. And it's really hard to restore those relationships and recruiting when you have wholesale staff changes. You're going to wind up losing a lot of kids because you just don't maintain the relationships that you need in recruiting. And so suddenly, you go through a change of six coaches. You don't maintain the level of recruiting that you had before. You have that big down class in recruiting, and then suddenly lose 29 guys to the NFL in 3 years, into the NFL draft, 35 guys to the NFL over those 3 years. And that class is counted on to replace those guys, and they just haven't. So, Florida State's just at a point where with some of the injuries and some of the key injuries, and with them happening at some of the same spots, they've just not been able to survive against, I think, probably the most difficult schedule that anybody's played so far, especially defensively. I'm going to take the rest of the podcast here. I'm going to break this down. I'm going to go Clemson's offense, or look at Florida State's defense against Clemson's offense. Look at Florida State's offense against Clemson's defense a little bit more granularly, and then do a little bit of question and answer, talking a little bit about recruiting, and then we'll wrap up here. But we'll start with the Clemson offense against the Florida State defense. And, I've mentioned on the preview that Clemson had not run the football all that well so far this year, except for when Watson had been running. I mean, they ran it better against Louisville. They ran it a little bit better whenever they've run Watson. Well, against Florida State, they ran Watson and still only averaged 3.3 yards per carry. Florida State's defensive front kicked Clemson's tail on Saturday. I mean, that 3.3 yards per carry against the Clemson offense is outstanding. I mean, that is terrific. You think about it, Alabama in the national championship game gave up 3.82 yards per carry to Clemson. That's another half yard more than what Florida State gave up against Clemson. Wow. Now that Derek Nnadi's playing healthy, he's playing like a first round or at worst second round draft pick on that defensive line. Josh Sweat is finally playing like he's healthy and like he is playing with some effort. DeMarcus Walker continues to play well. I mean, these guys they were really good. And once Dontavius Jackson got inside, The linebackers were pretty good downhill against the run as well. Dontavius Jackson has really played well the last couple weeks, and he has earned the reps. I mean, he played almost the entire game against Clemson, which of course was not a bad thing for Baron Browning, who Dontavius Jackson is trying very hard to get Florida State get to come to Florida State, the Texas linebacker, arguably the best linebacker recruit in the country. Not bad for him to see Dontavius Jackson getting all those reps as a true freshman. Certainly not bad for Marvin Wilson, who's also from Houston, like Dontavius Jackson, and Jackson has really been pushing to try to come to Florida State as well to see that their guy can come in and play right away in that situation and is getting that run. Big deal. And those guys were on the sidelines. Those guys were in the stands on their official visit to see this game. So that's a big deal. Now, we also said in the pregame, in the pregame analysis that Florida State would need to press and be very physical on the outside against Clemson's wide receivers to eliminate how much they could use the screen, to force them to be precise, that they needed to mix man and zone some, but that they should be able to play some robber. As long as they had somebody floating on the inside, they could play man. And that's really what they did. That happened. Played a lot of man-free with some press, with the robber, or with the spy. And yes, Mike Williams did get inside too easily on too many occasions using his size. I think they were really trying to keep him from being able to beat them on the back shoulder. And Clemson, I think, anticipated that a little bit, and they did a good job of reading that, where they were able to take advantage of Williams being able to get inside and get some key conversions on slants. But I think overall, Florida State won that matchup for the most part, and, you know, on the outside with those wide receivers. Given what was expected perhaps coming into this game, I think Florida State more than held their own there. They held their own on those 50-50 balls. And, you know, I'd said Watson had been less consistent accuracy-wise, particularly throwing down the field, and that was still true in this game. But, man, did he drop some crucial dimes when they needed him. I mean, that third down throw on third and long yardage from inside their five-yard line to flip field position may have saved the game for Clemson. Then the third and 20 that he threw to Renfro, where Westbrook was a fingernail from breaking that pass up. Great catch by Renfro. That made it a fourth and one, and Clemson was able to convert and then go down and score on that drive. You realize Clemson doesn't get that fourth and one. Going from third and 20, if Clemson doesn't convert on third and from third and 20, they don't win the game. Yet another play where just a slightly different result. I mean, if that ball skips, or if Westbrook's able to actually touch it, it's a change. Also, Williams making a great throw on the play on which Marshall got ejected, where a really good throw from Watson, Williams making the play. You know, really, really close from Florida State, but Watson really was the difference on a lot of these key throws. He was not super consistent, but it was the key throws that were the problem. Now, I said coming in that my concerns in this game were going to be the slot receivers and the tight end. So Renfro, Scott, and McLeod, and then tight end Leggett against Florida State's inside cover guys. And that is indeed where Florida State got killed. Especially once Marshall went out, that's where the 17 points came from on those last three drives. And, you know, we'd flagged Matthew Thomas, Trey Marshall, Lane, McFadden, and Sweat as the real keys in this game. I'd swap out Thomas for Nnadi, but otherwise, those guys were really the keys, and I had Marshall as the number two key defensively, personnel-wise, for Florida State in this game, and I think that held up. And, you know, with him out in the fourth quarter, it made all the difference. Flipping to the other side of the ball, pregame, I'd said, you know, I thought this would be a game where FSU would be able to pound them some, that they would need to pound them some, and maybe giving Patrick some carries, particularly in the middle of part of the game, so that Cook would have the explosion to be able to do what he needed to in the second half would make some sense. Well, takeaway number one offensively from Florida State in this game is that Dalvin Cook guy's pretty good. They didn't need to give Jacquez Patrick some carries in this game because Cook is special, and offensive line did a great job opening some holes for him in this game, particularly in that second half, and Cook hit those perfectly. And, you know, he's got to be at this point in the discussion of the best players in school history for Florida State, at least offensively. He's in the discussion. He's probably not at the very top, but he's you got to start thinking, you know, is this guy a top 10 player in school history at Florida State? I think you can really make a case for that. And I think it's very hard to argue that he's not the best running back in school history at this point. I mean, I think he certainly holds that title at this point. Now, I thought coming in that they would go to a lot of two tights, try to pound the ball. As I said, it was counterintuitive against that front, but I thought FSU could stretch them some and get on the edge given the size of their defensive line and how aggressive they can be, use their length a little bit, and that's what they did. They didn't use Francois' legs as much as I expected them to. Partly, I think, because Francois was taking enough of a beating otherwise, and they didn't need to in the running game. Handing it to Cook was getting minimum of 3 yards and then was getting chunk plays. So why run anybody else at that point? But otherwise, that's exactly what they did. And the other thing that I thought coming into this is that they needed to challenge that Clemson secondary on play action and force them to defend down the field. And they did that more than they had against anyone all year. Saw back shoulder throws for the first time in a while from Florida State. Multiple back shoulder throws. I'd wanted them to give Auden Tate some opportunities downfield, and they did that. Unfortunately, Tate had a bit of an up and down game and really gave up that interception by misplaying that vertical downfield. And you can see, again, a lot of people just assume, well, you got the bigger, more talented receiver there. He needs to be targeted more. He needs to be, you know, sometimes that's not the case. He's not actually getting the majority of the targets, even though he was already playing a bunch, because of other factors. And he'll become a bit more and more of a target the more he earns that. The guy who earned more of that in this game was Nunni Murray. Nyquan Murray stepped into the Bobo Wilson role and made numerous big plays. And some of you out there might be snickering, but Bobo Wilson's been Florida State's best receiver most of this year. And he's made a ton of really key plays, particularly against Miami. He's made some clutch plays all year, and Nunni Murray did that in this game and really showed that he's ready to play and contribute for Florida State. And Fisher mentioned after the game that Murray had sort of been perhaps in the doghouse, that he had needed to get a little bit more consistent in practice, and that he, with Bobo out, had really stepped up and had done what was necessary, and then that played over into the field. And I think we saw that. And we saw why Murray was the talk of camp on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, I've talked about this a lot. You don't need size at wide receiver if you can create space other ways. The best wide receivers in the NFL are not all big guys. I mean, Odell Beckham Jr. is like 6 foot. You get, you know, Antonio Brown is, what, 5'11", 6 foot? Those guys get open because they can create space all sorts of ways. And Nyquan Murray has a knack and also just tremendous quickness and acceleration to be able to create space. Now, the other thing that we really need to talk about here, other than, you know, I'll get to the line in a second again, is the play of DeAndre Francois. And the guy, first of all, you cannot criticize the guy's toughness. The guy is a warrior. This guy has earned the respect of his teammates for a reason. I mean, this guy, he stood in there, and it's a little bit of a miracle he's still alive today. But the reality is, Francois really struggled early in this game. First quarter and a half, he missed a lot of easy throws on first down. And you could see Florida State came into this game knowing that Clemson was going to sell out to try to stop Dalvin Cook. And they decided in that first quarter and a half that they were going to give a lot of first down throws to DeAndre Francois, those easy down throws to just give him some pitch and catch opportunities. And quite frankly, he just missed a lot of really easy throws. Just missed way too many, and that was a big part of why Florida State went down by 14 early in that game. Is Francois just didn't, he was just missing, just not accurate early in the game, and that really hurt. And it wasn't until the late second quarter when he started to find a little bit of a rhythm on a few of those key plays to Nyquan Murray, where you could see him getting a little bit more settled in, a little bit more comfortable, and that didn't last enough in terms of consistency for him to be able to match what Watson was able to do for Clemson late in the game. And you know, that's just that. And of course, then that brings us over to the other factor here, and that's that the FSU offensive line got dominated in passing situations. And so when Francois was missing throws on first down, and then that led to second and long and then third and long, Florida State got dominated in passing situations. And we knew coming into this game that this was going to be the big Clemson advantage coming in. Clemson's pass rush against Florida State's offensive line and quarterback in passing downs was not going to be a good matchup for Florida State. They needed to stay on schedule, and they didn't. Not enough. Whereas Florida State dominated in the running game, and it wasn't just Cook. The offensive line produced 3.3, a little over 3.3 line yards per carry, which is really good against just about anybody, let alone against the defense like Clemson's. I mean, that was surprising how much they were able to get space in terms of line yards per carry. And what line yards per carry are, what that is it's a way of quantifying how much of a running back's yardage could be credited to the offensive line. And generally speaking, what you can do is you can look at, okay, well, this is an explosive run. You can give the running back credit for what he does with it once he gets, you know, a couple yards past the line of scrimmage, a few yards past the line of scrimmage, say more than 4 yards past the line of scrimmage. But he has to get into the secondary somehow, and you have to credit the offensive line for the guy getting into the secondary on average. And Florida State's offensive line was giving Dalvin Cook roughly 4 yards per carry without needing to do anything else. 3.3 and change. Pretty good. That's more than you expect against a defense like Clemson. That said, this is just yet another example in the last couple of years of this offensive line making too many mental errors. Blown assignments, letting guys, just turning guys loose. A few of those where it looks like they turned a guy loose that was on the back for not picking him up, or a tight end who was supposed to help or whatever. But either way, there were other times where they just either got blown right by. I mean, Eberle got just straight turnstiled a few times by Dexter Lawrence, who is one of the best defensive linemen in the country. He's going to be a top five draft pick if he stays healthy. But still, you can't have that happening where you get beaten that badly. I mean, you've got to do what you can to at least keep a piece of him, to at least get a piece of him. You just can't turnstile the guy. But there are a number of other times where guys just were turned loose, and you can't let that happen. And then you got the false starts, and those false starts really stick out because it's happened in other games too. Now, that said, you can't forget the false starts from the wide receivers. There were two of them from the receivers, which is even more inexcusable. Those guys are looking in at the football. There's one from the tight ends. I think there at least one from the tight ends. I don't know if there were two. But that's unacceptable all around. And, you know, I had someone on Twitter ask, what's the deal with the false starts? And, you know, why isn't the group more disciplined? Well, yes, it's a discipline thing. Yes, no doubt, it's a discipline thing. But it also is a confidence thing. False starts, particularly in the offensive line, are a confidence thing as much as anything. And I think that was really the case from the right side of the Florida State line, where Rubel had a really rough night going up against the best defensive end he's going to see maybe, well, until if he's still at right tackle next year, which is certainly not a guarantee. He might see Christian Wilkins one more time, but otherwise Christian Wilkins is probably the best defensive end he's going to see in his college career, and he got his butt kicked. Landon Dickerson got his butt kicked in this game by and large by Dexter Lawrence. And those guys, when you're not winning up front, particularly on these passing downs, you start to lose focus because you're thinking about everything you've got to do to try to win the next rep. And you try to get a little bit of it, you try to get a good start or whatever, and then you jump. So a lot of that is confidence, especially with younger players, where when you're getting dominated, you false start. Those things feed off of each other. You lose that focus, you try to get a head start, and then you jump. Now, of course, then the response from lots of people is, well, Florida State just needs to put other guys out there. No, Florida State doesn't have any better offensive linemen to put out there right now, or they would be out there. And you get people saying, look at Eberle, look at him play. There's no way you can tell me that Florida State doesn't have a better option at center than Eberle. Well, I can tell you that because it's the truth. No, the five-star offensive lineman that you bring in as a true freshman at center, Bavion Johnson, on the roster, yes, but he's a first-semester freshman, people. The center position is really, really tough, and it's not just about being a five-star kid. Being a five-star kid is not going to make him better than Eberle at this point. This gets back to what I put in as rule number two for recruiting. Anytime you're thinking about recruiting, a third-year three-star is usually better than a first-semester five-star, at least through the first half of the season, usually for the whole season. But that's not true by the time that the five-star is in his second semester. Well, and that's more true as you get closer to the ball. So you get, you know, the center snapping the ball, the quarterback's getting the ball, that sort of thing. Those guys, those third-year players are usually better than the first-semester guys. They just are. And offensive linemen take a while to develop. You've got to be physically redeveloped, especially at center. You've got to be mentally sharp enough to be able to do it. So they just don't have it. They don't have those guys ready. And what we're seeing right now is, again, the fallout from not getting top-level recruits at that position in 2012 and in 2013. You got Rod Johnson out there, who's a top recruit, but who else out there was a top recruit? Florida State starting three-star players. And then the one five-star player that they're starting is a true freshman. Then you got a really high four-star left tackle. Those, that guy you don't have to worry about. But the others are not, we're not highly regarded guys. I think R probably should have been a four-star. But on the right side of the line, you got a true freshman and 2 3-star third-year guys. You're gonna that's the issue. And who do they have behind them? Well, you've got some first-year four-stars and a first-year five-star behind them. But the fact is, and you get people that say, well, Florida State doesn't play their young talent. Then explain Landon Dickerson, who's playing right now over Wilson Bell at right guard, because he's better. He's better than Wilson Bell. If Bavion Johnson was better than Alec Eberle, he'd be playing. That's the reality. But the fact is, the five guys out there are the best that Florida State has right now. And yes, I know that's frustrating. I know that's discouraging for fans to hear, but it is true. And going back to the discipline versus confidence thing, this is actually one of the things that makes coaching more of an art than a science, because those things can actually kind of be at odds. And I think one of the problems here is, with these younger guys, when you try to, you know, people say, well, you know, they just need to be more disciplined in practice or whatever. Come on, that's I can promise you, Trickett, that's not a problem. But and especially, I mean, if it's not Trickett, it's going to be Jimbo that's climbing all over him. But the problem is, when you start playing in fear of making mistakes, when you start playing tight like that, guess what happens? You make mistakes. And when you're a unit that's playing without the level of confidence that's necessary, then the irony of it is that you start playing like, if a super disciplined group and all you're doing is trying to play mistake free, but you're doing it without confidence, then you start to bend back towards looking undisciplined, even though it's not a lack of discipline, it's a lack of confidence. And the hard part, the art of coaching, is getting players to sort of be in that middle area where success lies. And that's something that it's much harder with younger groups. It's harder with younger kids. It's harder with groups that don't have a lot of continuity. And it's certainly harder when you've got a group that's just physically outmanned, that's out-talented. And frankly, against Clemson, you had a 3-star third-year player in Rubel up against a 5-star second-year player in Watkins, or Wilkins, in Christian Wilkins. And then you had a 3-star center who's also in his third year up against Dexter Lawrence, who is a 5-star and really could have been a 6-star, as far as I'm concerned, coming out of high school, defensive tackle. You got two early first-rounders, maybe top 5 picks, up against two guys that hope to get drafted one day. And that's really hard to sustain great confidence when that's the physical matchup. So this is where it gets tricky. And if you're trying to coach in that situation, you're really trying to grow confidence. You're trying to build that while retaining discipline. And that's the really hard part. And that's what they have to do. And it's got to get better. It's got to improve. There's no doubt about it. Nobody would tell you that more than the coaching staff, more than Rick Trickett or Jimbo Fisher. They know that. But that's where things stand. And I think the solutions are not so easy as just, oh, put another guy in there. No, it'll get worse, not better. Or, oh, they need to be more disciplined. Well, they already look like they're playing a little bit tight as it is. So if you turn up the pressure, it may be worse. So that's where this gets really tough. Now, let's move into the last couple segments here, last couple things here, a little bit of a lightning round. Couple takeaways from this game. First of all, I don't think there's any doubt after watching this game that Florida State is still a top 10 team in terms of level of play. Yes, they have three losses. Two of those losses are to arguably top five teams. And Florida State played like a top five team this last week, I think. This is very close to a playoff level team, and that's without Derwin James on the field. That's playing a boatload of young guys on defense and a bunch of, you know, guys, young guys on offense as well. I mean, Murray and Tate and Dickerson and the two young tight ends. I mean, this is a redshirt sophomore, or a redshirt freshman at quarterback. It's a really young team, and they're playing at that level at this point. And that's without Derwin James. And frankly, think about this. If UNC's kick doesn't go through or pass interference penalty isn't called, and then a cut block isn't called on Dalvin Cook's long run in near the end of the fourth quarter, Florida State's in the playoff right now without Derwin James. That's how close things are. I mean, the margins are so razor thin in college football. Now, the thing is, that wouldn't change the fact that this team has a lot of warts, and this is not a championship team. Even with Derwin James, I don't think this is a championship team. I don't think this team goes in and beats an Alabama. I mean, they could with the right bounces or whatever, but this isn't a championship team. This offensive line, this quarterback, they're not going to win a title this year. The defense is getting better, but still has some issues with some quality, with the lack of quality depth on the inside, with some inexperience, with missed assignments, with a number of things there. But they're learning to play, and you can see they're learning to play with intensity. And this is getting to be pretty close to a championship level team by the end of the year. You put Derwin James out there, and it might look like one. That's the encouraging thing for Florida State fans there. Now, I will say this also continues to reveal the continued need. This coaching staff, and you know, I know there may be some changes, and we'll get to that in another podcast. But this coaching staff needs to do a better job of getting guys and their roles figured out earlier in seasons, particularly on defense. That's something that's been a problem going back to 2013, where it took four games to figure out that Christian Jones was better on the edge. And that, you know, they needed to make a couple different moves. I mean, Jalen Ramsey ended up moving to safety after the first game. And there are a number of things that ended up happening there. They had to figure out roles for guys. But once they did, they were dynamite. Well, they need to do a better job of figuring that stuff out now. And doing it earlier in seasons. And that's going to have to be the case next year when they open with Alabama. Now, I think there's going to be a lot fewer moving parts next year for next year's team than for this year's team. But that's where things are. Now, I'm going to do another podcast. I'm running a little bit long here. I'm going to split and do, actually, instead of doing question and answer and talking about some of the recruiting stuff, I'm going to do another podcast that'll drop before the preview, the NC State preview. I'll do another podcast on some of those things, but I'm already running a little bit over time, and it's getting late here, so I'm going to go ahead and wrap this now. That'll do it for this episode of the Unconquered podcast. Once again, leave us effusive ratings, five-star ratings on iTunes if you're enjoying this podcast, and share it with a friend. You can follow me on Twitter at Doc Staples. Find us on Facebook, The Unconquered Podcast. Be sure to catch the next podcast, which is going to cover some of those other issues, some of the question and answer, and talk about the recruiting implications of this game in particular, which, just to give you a hint, look pretty good coming out of this. So, until then, this is Jason Staples. This has been the Unconquered Podcast on Seminole Sports Radio. Thanks for listening. I made this.